Well, Tracy Nelson, Stranger in My Own Hometown, taking us up to Brewocracy now with somebody that is not a stranger to Port Townsend, that is Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow. You're on KPTZ, Brewocracy Now, where you can ask any question you want of John Morrow by emailing me at dj@kptz.org. I have that open right in front of my screen. Good afternoon, John.
Tim, how are you? Great to see you. And I feel a little bit like a stranger in my hometown? I feel like there's a lot to learn here, and I can't wait till we're on the other side of this pandemic. I could really get into it.
Yes, there is. But I have to say, because I can see you on screen, I could see you grooving to that little tune there. Just for a minute. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. That was real good.
Well, what's on the top of the list for you today, John? What would you like to talk about?
Well, I mean, I'm happy to handle questions. I guess just a reflection on today being Earth Day. You might say every day is Earth Day, but hey, it's been around for 4.5 billion years. And I guess this year's theme is Restore Our Earth. And I think notable that President Biden's pledge to reduce climate emissions by half by 2030, which is a pretty ambitious goal and something that I dealt with quite a bit in my previous role. I was actually in Paris for the COP21 climate conference, where the US was sort of on the global stage, particularly with China making some really ambitious pledges and galvanizing international action. And then things kind of went silent from our country for a few years. It's nice to see that we're back, because I guess the one statement about climate change is it's unavoidable right now. We're kind of locked in, and there's some opportunities, not just to like keep ourselves from heating up to the point of no return, but there's financial health, prosperity benefits for everybody. So it's not punitive. It's our way forward.
And if folks out there don't know, Mr. Morrow was previously the sustainability manager for Auckland, New Zealand. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Chief Sustainability Officer.
Sustainability officer. So quite the background in these kind of environmental issues that we are facing as a community and as a state, as a country. And what we don't want is to be looking at you and your office there high above a city council meeting, and that's waterfront property or waves lapping up at those windows. We don't want that, John.
No. I mean, I think, you know, look, the Northwest is going to do better than most places around this, but it still means quite a lot to our infrastructure, our, you know, potential to grow food, particularly water supply. I mean, it sort of has an effect on everything. And of course, global migration and change and demographic change. So we really need to get this thing under control as an international community. And, you know, we're one small town in the large scheme of things, but, you know, we're also a mighty little town. And I think more and more the decisions we make should reflect, you know, an awareness that we're making decisions that are lasting a long time. And it's our chance to actually make the right call for something like climate change instead of the wrong call.
Well, since it is Earth Day, and since you opened this door, what we do here in Port Townsend is not going to probably change the course of global climate change, but what, in your role as a city manager, are there any small steps that you can take here or that we can take?
Yeah, look, I said this a lot in Auckland, because the argument I got on the international stage from a lot of folks was because my mayor at the time during 2015, it's changed since, but former mayor Len Brown was really interested in leadership on climate change. And I also happened to work for Mayor Greg Nickels in Seattle when he was galvanizing mayors across the country to effectively sign on to the Kyoto Protocol. So, you know, this ain't my first rodeo around climate change. But since then, I think we're still gathering momentum and trying to, you know, understand what we can all do. So the one thing I want to be clear about, every one of us in our day-to-day activities can actually help. But I don't want to discount the importance of action. But really, the system and the structure is what's in the way, because very few people have a choice to buy an electric car if it's twice as expensive, or to, you know, to ride in on a bike if they live 40 miles away from their workplace. So to some degree, the systems that underpin us, how we create and distribute energy, you know, how we get around, how we've built cities and the infrastructure that's required for cities and small towns even, you know, that's something that's fundamental. And I think that's why I like thinking about this as either a collection of local communities that can act, you know, to really push for change. Like, you know, we've, I think to some degree, Washington State is some of that. There's some climate legislation moving through the state legislature now that the governor's been championing. But also that, you know, it's kind of like a hold hands and jump together thing, because, you know, the actions that an individual can take really can't compare to changing the system. So, you know, in Port Townsend, I mean, of course, there are benefits, right? So if we are smart about our infrastructure, thinking ahead to when inevitably we're going to have to think about things. I mean, even now, with more storm surge and some sea level rise already, what that means for our planning, how we get around transportation. I mean, we're really trying to put a focus on walking and cycling, not for everybody, although I would argue almost everybody walks at least some distance, whether it's to your car or front door or around town. So those are the kinds of things at a small scale level, we can sort of change the structure of Port Townsend to enable people to not have a false choice. You know, it's not like which bad choice do you want? It's actually, there's actually some choices that are available to improve your health, connect socially, and do the right thing for climate change.
And I kind of appreciate having somebody with your background here in Port Townsend, because we can very easily fall into we're doing our part because we recycled our beer bottles. And,
right. Well, that's important too.
That's important too. But it is a very it's a very small step, and I think that there are some systemic changes that can be made. How do I put this? Sometimes I think that we are placed, that burden is placed on us from industry, and it belongs with industry.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think one of the thing is, you know, there's a comparison here, and this is where it's helpful. I actually know right now that a couple people are listening, including my wife. So thank you. and she's not an every week listener, but one of the things I'd like to compare this to is kind of out of my depth. Somewhat, but, you know, thinking about things like gender equality or race and social justice, I mean, you could think about every interaction that you have as a human being with another human being as an opportunity to cement a approach to equity and fairness and respect, or you can go the other way. However, even if all of us are just overtly aware, self-aware, and nice, that's not changing the structure that it's an unfair playing field for women, for people of color, for indigenous community members, for trans community. So I think about it much like that. You know, if you don't change the fundamentals of how the structural inequalities are causing it to be unfair for so many people, then you can't really make every interaction count. Just like with climate change, if you don't change the structure, you know, your actions really won't stack up. So anyway, that's that was inspired by my wife, because that's part of her work and something that I'm trying to understand better as a pretty heteronormative white male in the society we live in.
Well, again, you open that door, Mr. Morrow. What is your wife's work?
Oh, my wife's a professor and the smarty pants in the family. Uh-huh. She was a professor in University of Auckland, and now she's a visiting professor for Penn State University. And and studies gender and food politics and all sorts of great stuff. But I think it's just a reminder that the big picture stuff does matter. And local action matters too. But the connection between the two is really where I think the difference is made.
Well, okay, well, Earth Day.
Anyway, sorry, went really big there, Tim.
No, that's, we have to go big. When we face the kind of problems that we're facing now, and this town, I found, never doesn't have a problem going big. I'm okay with that. Or at least having big dreams, because if we don't have those dreams, nothing happens.
That's right.
Moving on to the next topic that kind of just jumped out at me this morning, financial sustainability. What does that mean to us? How? I mean, there was an interesting quote from Mayor Sandoval on the fact that, you know, people come here, they fall in love with Port Townsend, and there's a certain, some tendency at least, to expect the same level of services that we might be in the urban centers that we move from that have a large tax base with a lot of big box stores and et cetera, that are not in the cards here in Port Townsend, thankfully, from my perspective. Yeah. So how do we thread that needle? How do we, I get the feeling that we're struggling just to maintain what we have.
Yeah. You know, I was having a regular catch up, as I do with all council members, this morning and this morning with Deputy Mayor David Faber. And this came up because I think, you know, we got into a great conversation, as we tend to do, around, you know, the confronting nature of this conversation. And honestly, I was also on a call with a number of city managers, really some of them for the first time I've met, around Washington State just an hour ago. And this also came up there because, you know, the real fact of the matter is the things that the city provide that we collectively decide as a community that the city's role is around things like basic infrastructure and services, that stuff really underpins a healthy natural environment, a meaningful economic development for everyone, and a high quality of life. And so there's a direct connection between what the city does and what we all depend on, and actually probably why a lot of us are here. And so in order to meet the kind of expectations and actually probably growing needs of our community as it changes, you know, we need to think about, well, how do we fund that? What's too much? Where does it come from? And really work through some of those kind of existential questions about how we continue moving forward as a city. Because I think if we don't, you know, the cost of services will increase over time. I mean, at its most basic form, the cost will increase and tax revenues will not keep up. And so we have two basic choices. I think it's better than this, but we either, you know, increase revenues or we cut service, you know. So, you know, if you're talking about it that bluntly, both options seem bad. really what I feel responsible for is to steward a conversation with our community starting this year, but probably lasting many years, of how to make sure that in 5, 10, 20 years, we're not pitting against a real crisis in being able to sustain what people depend on. Because if we talk it through now, we have many years before our general fund would be negative. Some cities actually right now, they're being confronted with it right this year. So they're suddenly having to say, oh gosh, we're out of cash. What do we cut? Luckily, we're not in a dire situation. We've been very well financially stewarded. I'll say publicly, you know, our audit report came out again, sixth straight year of a clean audit. I mean, the finance team is just stellar. But that doesn't take away the fact that, you know, if we want to enjoy the services we have now, and the numbers are decreasing and how to fund that, then we need to think about what to do. So that's why this year we're taking this on. And it's gonna look, I think, somewhat like this, and we workshopped this with council this past week, that, you know, we want community representation. I think there's a desire to appoint a task force of people who, you know, from across different sectors and different areas of expertise can really understand, you know, how is the city funded? What are the basics of how the budget works? And then to start engaging the community in a way where, we have a good understanding of what our options are, you know, what the trade-offs are, what our community's willingness to pay is, because, you know, for some it's easy to just crank up the tax revenue, but that doesn't work for everybody. And I feel seriously responsible for the inequity in our own town, and that what some people's ability to pay is not at all what others are. So, you know, it's a very it can be a dangerous conversation, but I think hand over heart, I mean, honestly, if we don't have this conversation, we're reacting. If we start it now, we're actually working together to figure out the solution.
And gathering this input from the public, doesn't it seem that, well, it's a gross generalization, but people want everything. Yeah. People, I mean, that's basically human nature, isn't it? You know, during this pandemic, I've done a lot of camping. That's my social distancing option. And I've come to realize that, you know, the most important thing to me is indoor plumbing. But indoor plumbing is not very sexy. It's I think that that may not be at the top of everybody's list. It seems like there is a bit of education about the cost of that infrastructure and the need and the priorities of it before some of the other wants and needs, shall we say.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the thing is, you know, it's, I mean, I'm not talking down to people when I say it's complicated, because it's complicated for me and I see the whole thing. And I think what this is an opportunity to do is to really work together, understand how the system works, what our priorities are. And yeah, I greatly value indoor plumbing, but you know, our again, our award-winning wastewater team, 22 straight years of winning awards here, the second longest running of any city in Washington State. I mean, how many times do we tell that story? And I'll just, you know, take the blame here. City's not always great at telling every resident what we do and why. And if we can connect the dots for people, because look, people listening now, you might be on your way to another appointment or job or meeting. You might be, you know, people are busy and they don't have time to sit and walk through hours and hours of either city council meeting or briefing papers. We need to do a better job really crystallizing how things work so that everybody can kind of get a quick dose of that and understand what it means. And then we're all positioned to make a better call together. But city's not always great at that kind of that communication, and we're trying to improve our game. One of those things is the annual report, which we came out with, you know, a month or so ago. It tells more of a crisp story about what we accomplished this past year. That's a really great place to start to understand, okay, what does the city do? You know, what does each department do? So I'd start there if you want a quick education.
And I hope that people do, because this is not a large city, but this is complex, and it takes a lot of expertise. I mean, I would probably have a hard time thinking that you don't have a department head that doesn't at some point say, we're going to need more money for whatever reason that there is. And then, and making that, you know, threading that is certainly difficult.
Yeah, it's complicated. Could I also, speaking of how the city works, I want to shout out to two gentlemen that I met over the weekend who I apparently listen. I've never met them before. They were in kayaks. And I was at North Beach with my family and a friend. We were standing at the Chinese Gardens kind of has a bit of an outfall and a connection. It's bubbling up on the sand. And these guys were great. They were like, hey, you know, of course, I was in my incognito outfit. Hey, do you know what that is? And I said, well, I think I do. What do you think it is? You know, and they said, that is the wastewater treatment plant outfall. I said, oh, actually, I don't think so. And we kind of went back and forth a few times, and then I, you know, pulled off the disguise. And they were fantastic because they vowed after learning that actually the outfall is further out and you can't see it. And there's just a connection between Chinese Gardens and the North Beach right there that they were going to tell all their friends. So here I am helping you guys get a jump on that. But it was just, it's always such a pleasure to meet people who are truly fascinated in how the city works. And they're wanting to tell everybody else about it. I think that's just gold.
Well, you know, that I'm so glad you brought that up, because I remember a while back, is it Steve King, your public works director?
That is correct, yes.
He actually spoke about that. And while I was cruising through Facebook, I saw a picture of that outfall. And it was, and the comment was, you know, this is where your wastewater treatment, it was at low tide. And it seemed very plausible that that was a wastewater outfall if I had not known better. But who knows that? Who knows that, man?
Exactly. I mean, that's why we want to do a few little did you know kind of experiments. I mean, you know, do you know how many library books circulate a year, or, you know, how many public records requests? I mean, we're sitting on 149 right now just for this year. I mean, all sorts of fascinating information. And honestly, if we don't tell people what's going on, how are people supposed to know? You know, you see a wastewater treatment plant, you know that there's an outfall. It's pretty logical to put two and two together and say, well, that's the outfall. But in fact, it's not.
thankfully, it's not. Yeah. We only have 5 minutes. This goes so fast, John Morrow.
Hit me too.
Navigator program.
Yeah.
The Navigator program. I see that it's up for renewal. Is that correct? Something with the... Can you explain how this works? Can you explain? I mean, people, I think, are fairly aware that we have a navigator and proud of that fact, frankly. But having the navigator is not, it's only a very small piece of that puzzle. So when we go out and we find folks that have these behavioral, mental health, drug issues, do we have the resources to take that next step with them? How is, I guess what I'm asking is an update. How is it working, or is it working?
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess I will give a qualitative answer to that, because I'm actually in 10 minutes going to be at the swearing in of a new police officer over at Pope Marine, all masked up, and I'll be muffled in whatever I'm going to say with my mask on. But, you know, it's very much top of mind. And, you know, every week I get a report from Interim Chief Serber, the detectives, and also Judd Haynes, our navigator. And what I try to do with the city council report is to just demonstrate that, you know, of the 100 to 150 calls for service any week, you know, a good 20 or more are behavioral health related. And this past week, for instance, I think by memory, I could say there were two new contacts by the navigator to new people requesting services. And there were seven repeat contacts with folks who were already kind of known to the navigator's services. So I think to say pretty qualitatively, I think it's working, because otherwise you would see no work being done or no requests for services. And I think it also shows that so many of our calls for service are related to alcohol, behavioral health, self-harm, and challenges that are really requiring a high level of skill for de-escalation and real social care and you know, almost caseworker type care. And I think that's the strength of the program is, you know, at first it was funded by a grant program to get it going. And now we write the contract to directly to the mental health provider to onboard Judd. But, you know, in my conversations with some officers, when I go on my ride-alongs, I hear how important that kind of training is. And some have said, you know, gosh, if we can get another, you know, navigator on, I'm sure we could probably use that. I'm encouraged that the county has just received a grant to have some navigator time as well, which I think is a very positive step forward. We tend to also assist the county in some of those services. And so now we can work together even more closely. So, you know, I think particularly during COVID, when we have lots of, you know, additional stress on people, the services that our navigator provide are truly important to this community. And I think match the community's desire for policing that isn't just one version. You know, we have a community service officer, a navigator, a school resource officer that are really different tool sets to match our community need. I'm a huge fan of the program.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, because I think you have a lot of company with that. In the 2 minutes that we have left, I was watching the national news recently, just a couple days ago, and I can't remember what network, but they did a piece on Washington State's de-escalation training for police officers. Mm-hmm. And they really presented it as a model that was to be replicated throughout many states anyway. And it was a very nice piece, a very complimentary piece. Mm. Are police officers, do they take part in that? Or yeah. is it a contracted, or do we go through the state?
I mean, look, I think it's a really great point, Tim, because I think that's something I should have highlighted when I was, you know, applauding the navigator position and Judd as an individual in his work. You know, it goes without saying that actually some degree of de-escalation is basic, you know, training requirements for the entire team. And in the calls that I've been on with our police team, I've seen them put that to use every time. And so even though we have a specialist whose job it is to do this work, to some degree, every officer in the Port Townsend Police Department has really exceptional skills and training in de-escalation. And I think that's why we see so much success when we're dealing with the problems we deal with in our community, that they do not escalate to the point where we've seen that happen nationally. And I'm very proud of the team for having those skills. It certainly improves outcomes for everybody.
Well, yes. And I'm hoping we have just a few seconds left. I want to thank you, John Morrow, and for the work that you're doing, and also for eliciting the feedback from the community as we go forward with a lot of these different initiatives. Mayor Sandoval says that you should take some time off for yourself. I wish I had somebody tell me that when I was
when I was good working. Luck though. I don't know when, but I will.
Okay. Well, I hope to see you around town on bike with your little girl. And
indeed. Thanks, Tim. Always a pleasure. See you next week.
Okay. See you next week. Thanks, Sean. Bye.